Hello and welcome to the Minimap Cast. For half a second, I thought you were going to start, Kerry. But I had to remember that I throw it to myself.
I don't even have the script. I don't even have a timer on. I'm so like...
Just flying by the seat of your pants.
Uh-huh, exactly.
I had a conversation about that phrase the other day.
And how did that go for you, Jeremy?
It was great, just because like it's a great phrase. It's
yeah.
It makes no sense at all, but it's so fun, and I know exactly what it means.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, it's like if the bottom fell out of your plane, I guess.
Is that a similar phrase?
It's not a saying,
right?
It's like, but like, you know, if that happened, then it would be like, you know, you wouldn't be sitting on anything. There wouldn't be anything underneath you. You'd be flying right by the seat of your pants.
Exactly. I thought you were maybe even alluding to the Clark and Dawes sketch about the front fell off. If you remember that.
Oh, I don't recall. Those sketches are so absurd. They're very fun at the time, but I can't recall them after more than 30 seconds has passed.
That's the one I can recall the most, the front fell off, because it's so perfect, and like it doesn't even matter that it was topical at the time. It's simply still hilariously ridiculous now.
Totally. It's like those sketches are always very like Abbott and Costello, yep. Who's on first?
Yes, yeah. That one is the most Abbott and Costello, because we'll watch it at the end after the episode is done. Speaking of the episode, hello and welcome to the Minimap Cast. It is a podcast about video games. Would you believe it? Minimap Cast is a fortnightly video podcast that goes live every Thursday evenings, like right now. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you tell your friends and give the show a positive rating wherever you listen to your podcast. It makes a huge difference, and it only takes a few seconds. If you want to get notified every time a new episode is released, make sure to follow us on social media at MinimapAU on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Twitch, where the Minimap Cast goes live every second Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. Little late this evening, but that's all good. Minimap also wants to say thank you to Shook for letting us use the Moog Model D Improv as the music for the Minimap Cast. You can listen to more of Shook's music at shook.bandcamp.com. And finally, Minimap is also completely independent and funded almost entirely out of our own pocket. To help keep the lights and mics on, you can support us by becoming a patron. For only $5 a month, you can know that you are indeed supporting the show, and you will also gain access to some of our special bonus features. Head on over to patreon.com/minimapau to help us out. And remember, it's cheaper than a latte with oat milk. Kerry, you're Kerry, I'm Jeremy. I sometimes forget to introduce myself when I host the show, which is funny. But I was in the city the other day because I did the refresher course for my CPR certificate. And I got a coffee.
Kiss some dummies.
Yes, kiss some dummies, and with two fingers, perform CPR on a baby, because you don't.
Oh yeah, not your whole hand, so you don't break their ribs.
Yeah. And on my way back from that, I was heading home after that, and I stopped off to get a coffee, in a cafe in the city, and they charged me $8.
Oh.
And it was just
$8.
Just an oat latte. And they also
said, that was cheaper than last time. Didn't you say like $11 or something the last time we were here?
That was like a ridiculous scenario where it was like, I think it was a public holiday, and it was like a caravan or something. It was like a whole, there was so many things.
And it was delivery to.
Yeah. Whereas this time they handed me my coffee and they said, here you go, Jeremy. And they said, Jeremy. And I was shocked because I didn't give them my name. And I looked at them like, do we know each other? And I had left my name tag on from my CPR course. But like for like 10 seconds, I was not accepting my beverage. And I was just looking
at it. Cause you were shell shocked.
I was like, do I know? Like, sorry. Like, I don't remember. I recognize that. That was quite funny.
Oh, that is very funny.
I was shell shocked of that. And also just the overall price.
Yep. shell shocked and sticker shocked.
Yes. Yes. We have two main topics for the show today. We have a Tears of the Kingdom spoilers episode. That'll be the second half of the show. So if you're still waiting to get to the end of that before you want to know what happens, we'll let you know when we start talking spoilers of Tears of the Kingdom.
It took me less than 12 months to beat that game.
It did, and you didn't do every shrine before you got to the end.
You're right, I didn't.
Yes. In fact, I would say that you perhaps didn't even approach that very completionist like you usually would. Unless you just played a lot and I just didn't know. Okay, maybe.
My game clock's at like 155 hours.
But like level of like, so, like what's the overrun?
I've got like five or six. I think I was at 34 out of 40 hearts.
What's the over under for your side quests though?
Look, there's a lot I haven't done, but there's also a lot that I have.
Yeah. Like if it was the previous game, you would have done all of them.
Yes. No, exactly.
Yeah. But now, gonna talk about the Game Expo, which was a couple weeks ago now. I went. They provided me a media pass. And I have impressions on that. And then I suppose probably next time we do a podcast might be the time after the DreamHack. It's really soon. DreamHack is soon. It's in a couple of weeks. It might actually be just after the next episode. But maybe I'll do it there. I don't know. See how I go. So the Game Expo. It came back this year. After a pilot last year where there was plenty of growing pains, and plenty of room for improvement. I went this year again, and there was plenty of improvement. It was a good convention. I had a good time there. One of my biggest complaints from last year, I remember, was that there wasn't a whole lot of game stuff there. There were some retro consoles. I think there was a little bit of tournaments and maybe some fighting game stuff. And a small collection of some local independent games. But a lot of the stuff that did get like a big feature for the Game Expo last year was cosplay and Artist Alley, and like just anime stuff, and just general pop culture stuff. It's not bad, but like when it's called the Game Expo, my expectation was it was going to be like a small PAX, basically. Like it wasn't quite that. Look, it was their first time. Every first convention in Melbourne has, for some reason, the exact same growing pains. Because I've been to a lot of the first, like their first time in Melbourne. I've been to the first Oz Comic Con. I went to the one of the first Armageddons, the first AMC, the first DreamHack, the first PAX. They all did the same thing the first time they came, which is like kind of have some of what you'd expect and have a whole lot of like glaring omissions.
Yeah.
This year, the Game Expo had a bunch of game stuff. They had about 17, I think, local games.
Oh, great.
Some that I recognized from PAX, like the vampire dating sim, one was there. A handful of other, like some beat 'em up games. And some AFL, there was like a booth for an AFL game that was there. They also had game related things nearby. The fighting game area or like the console free play area was like a little bit more expanded upon. They had game related products there. They had like some gaming protein powder stuff or whatever, which I walked right past. And some charity initiatives that are gaming adjacent stuff, and also some voice actors from games as well. The voice actor from for Bloodhound, for example, was there. So that made it. They did it. They made a video game convention. It was quite good. The vibe there was good. Everyone there was excited about like video game stuff. There was still plenty of Artist Alley. There was still plenty of cosplay. They had a cosplay competition, as they always do, or a cosplay parade, I think is actually what they were calling it. And that was still good. So it wasn't like that they had traded some stuff for other stuff. Like they just added more things overall, which made it like a worthwhile video game specific convention to go to. The price is not PAX prices. It's a bit cheaper than that. I think it was $40 a ticket or $45 a ticket. And that's like much more accessible. And it just overall was an enjoyable time. I would now recommend people go to that.
Great.
Yeah. Like, I think that by the end of the second day, if you do go both days, you will definitely like it. It's not a thing where you need to spend the entire day there both days. It is also the size of it is it was the same size as last year, where they had like, I think about one half of the expo floor, as PAX. But it felt like it felt like they used up that space really well. There was plenty of room for board games as well. They had some live musical performances. There was like some teething pains with scheduling and technical issues. But overall, it was a fun time. I had a good time at the Game Expo. I'll go to the Game Expo next year.
What was one of the highlights of your time there?
I think I don't have a specific highlight because I was wanting to go the next day, but I went out too late on day one that I didn't make it out day two.
You wiped yourself out.
I really did. And the good time was had because of the Game Expo. I didn't fuck around and then just like end up ruining my convention. I went to the after party for the Game Expo, but I think honestly the highlight was the fact that we're not just stuck with PAX. That PAX is bad, but you need to have a competition, but like you need to have someone else doing something that isn't just PAX. Like this doesn't feel like small PAX. This feels like its own thing at this point. There was a greater like focus on it being a little bit more creative and a little bit more like local to at least Australia. I don't know if it didn't feel Melbourne specific. It felt just like a little bit more Australian specific, with some guests. But it was good to know that if, you know, Reed Pop starts to, you know, like fumble or starts to not be as like shifts focus to something that perhaps is a little bit less favorable to something that might be a little bit more profitable for them. Like, I'm not saying they have done that, but there's always that chance when one company starts to run every convention around the world, there's that chance that that happens, right? It's nice to know that there is another one that is operating, similar to how for a long time it was Armageddon and Supernova, and then Comic-Con came along and there was more, and it was like it's always good to have more of them and feel like that you're not stuck with a single entity always running your video game stuff. I know some people have had issues with Penny Arcade as a whole in the past that has meant that PAX is always just kind of feel a bit odd for them. So it's good to have options.
Yeah, for sure. And good that it's in a different chunk of the year as well. It's so easy for everything to get lumped in to the same time period for us down here.
My hope is that some of the publishers that focus on smaller studios, so like perhaps like Team 17 and ones of that size, maybe Devolver, my hope is that
it's been there every now and then. But
yeah, but like my hope is that they start to perhaps like maybe like have a small presence there and show off maybe one of the like another local game that is like, for example, like Broken Roads has come out I think today or comes out today or came out yesterday.
Reviews came out today at least. Let me have a look for you.
Yeah, but I think it, like the game might have also launched today as well. Published by Team 17, I believe. It would have been cool for Team 17 to have a Broken Roads presence there because it's so Australian specific. It would have been 3 weeks before launch. That game has come out in a state that maybe that was a reason why that wouldn't have happened. But like something like that, something adjacent to that, I think would be cool to have a as a presence there going forward.
It did come out today on Steam. It has 47 reviews. 34% of them are positive. It is currently sitting at mostly negative. It is a bit very buggy, apparently.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus, unfortunately.
Yeah.
However, yeah, that's basically like that's the Game Expo. It's a good time. The Artist Alley's still there. There was one person that was there that was trying to talk to artists about AI. An AI generated art in gigantic quotation marks, and everyone there was like, "No,
go away!
Yeah, what are you doing here?"
Yeah.
So that was funny. But yeah, the Game Expo,
great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing your time. Maybe I'll book a 1-day ticket next year.
Yeah,
who knows?
1 day would be great. It would be a fun way to spend some time. And something else that was there that was really cool was that Lost in Cult. It wasn't them that were there, but there was a store there that was selling a bunch of their books, like Lock On and some of the art books, and they also had stacks of video game vinyls as well.
Did you see anything that you wanted to get?
I wanted to get the Bloodborne one before I remember that you'd given that to me in the past, and so I didn't.
Sure did.
I didn't buy that. There was a bunch that were there, like they were not cheap. They were actually quite expensive because they had been none of them are sold here, so they're all
They're all imported. They're all at a premium. They need their cut.
They're all at a premium. But there was some Final Fantasy ones there. There was like a lot of the Souls games there, so like I think Dark Souls 1 and 3 both had their vinyls there. A lot of RPGs like Chrono Cross and No Kingdom Hearts, which I was bummed about, but there was some Mario ones that were not Nintendo ones, but like orchestrations of Mario music. Same with Zelda. There was some cool ones there. Like there was none that I loved enough that I wanted to get them. But there were some good ones.
Mm, yeah, awesome.
I actually don't know what the next game vinyl that I buy would be. I've got all the ones that I love, I think.
Yeah, what about Forts?
it's just that sound. Probably Kingdom Hearts, I guess, would be the only one that I want but don't have. But I don't know. I don't know if they've ever pressed any Kingdom Hearts vinyls.
Yeah, that might be a Disney thing making that tricky. Maybe.
Yeah, because some of the songs are just Disney songs.
Oh yeah. And then people might be disappointed that they're not there, and it's just all of the OST stuff.
And to be fair, like their OST stuff is better than the licensed Disney stuff because it's still a recreation of the Disney song, so it's not the ones that I know from the movies either. I would probably buy, a Zelda one. I'd probably buy I guess Breath of the Wild or Link to the Past. But Nintendo don't do those either, which is a shame.
No, they don't. You're right. That is a shame. It also says on their website they had an Apex tournament.
They did, yeah. It was a creators tournament, so it was like all the content creators that are good at Apex got to play. I didn't get to see that. The thing that I'm bummed about missing the most was I didn't get to see the fucking Beyblades tournament that was there.
Yeah, I was telling someone about that earlier today.
I was so excited to finally see that, but I didn't make it in on Sunday because I was feeling worse for wear. But that'll be, I hope that comes back because that sounds fucking sick.
Yeah, it really does. They've got a like recap of the event montage. It's only a minute 10, but maybe they'll have a single clip of Beyblades in there.
Yeah. Maybe Disco Elysium is one I should try and look for as a vinyl. Just quickly.
Oh yeah. That's got some great music.
It does.
And music that would go really well in that medium, and then just that you would just want to like have on in the house.
I've had that on in the house before because I've just put on the soundtrack and it's excellent.
It's not like the Bloodborne soundtrack where like you're doing the dishes and all of a sudden it's like Well, like,
because it's a Souls game that isn't Elden Ring, there's only music for boss fights. They don't have they don't have just Yharnam set. Like, they've got the main menu music,
right?
And there might be a song that plays when you're at the Hunter's Lodge.
Yeah, maybe a song for a cutscene or something, like introductory. There is hardly even an introductory cutscene, though, is there? There's not really cutscenes in Bloodborne.
It's usually for bosses or when you get transported to a different area altogether, and the cutscene is usually like your character slowly standing up and looking around, and then it just it's the the Dark Souls cutscene. You know,
sure. Yeah, the thing with Dark Souls and Elden Ring, though, is they have big opening cutscenes where they introduce you to a lot of the lore of some of the bosses that you will end up facing.
Yeah, Bloodborne has that, but it's not about the bosses. They do like they do the history of like they do
the hunt.
Well, like they do that, but they also have the like Master Willem, I must depart. Like, you know, and they say like glory to the old blood, but it's what happens like I think 100 years or like 40, 60 years before the game happens, I think, in the timeline. It's a weird cutscene. It's a weird game.
I should play that.
But you've played something else in the meantime.
Okay. Oh, I have.
You've got to the credits. You finished The Legend of Zelda, The Tears of the Kingdom. there's no the before tears.
The Tears of the Kingdom.
Yes. How'd you go?
Jeremy, I thought the ending of this game was excellent.
That's so funny.
And I've said that, and then you said, I remember you said, I think we played a different game. I'm like, oh, really? Which, I am interested to hear your opinion on what you didn't enjoy so much. But yeah, no, I really thought it was excellent.
I think you actually might not disagree with what I'm saying, but I think I just didn't like it more. But I'm
sure.
Yeah, like you tell me about how it went for you. How'd you go?
Well, it was good, because you said that I should probably aim to have it finished for our end of year discussion last year. And I got to the point where you beat all the four temples, and then you go to the Hyrule Castle, and then they're like, oh, we're not ready yet. We need to do one last thing.
Yeah.
And then I basically stopped there.
Yeah.
And so coming back to that, doing that one last thing, which, you know, a bit of a mixed bag, but I liked it more overall than most people do.
Just to jump in, the spoiler talk begins now.
Oh, yeah, spoiler talk begins now. Yeah, let's do that.
That's obvious, but just letting you know, the spoilers will now begin.
So, yeah, the fifth sage hunt was a bit weird. But it's weird because you don't know there's going to be a fifth temple until the very, very end of the that whole sequence. And then you get there and it's basically just a boss fight room.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people thought, oh, wow, a brand new temple. Oh, it's already over. I kind of looked at that and I thought, there's been a whole bunch of like linear like puzzles and platforming and putting stuff together and doing unique stuff. It's just all been in the overworld to get to this fifth temple. And so I was just kind of like, oh, let's just call that the whole fifth temple and I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of framed it that way and I'm like, okay.
Like, you're right. It is like all of the building of the robot is the temple.
The way the Thunderhead clears and you have to like traverse that whole thing to even unlock the thing.
Yeah. I thought that entire section was bad, I think my issue was that I hated building the robot even.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. I was kind of over the slow, object moving puzzles by that point. Cause it's quite slow. Cause it's about,
It is slow.
Like walking in, picking it up immediately and not being able to take it immediately back out and just having to go the long way around. I found that.
I really enjoyed the puzzles you needed to do, like to get the block to travel along the wire that went up, but you had to position the little hook the right way. Like I sat there, I was like, oh, how does this work? And I enjoyed that moment. But you're right, it was very slow.
I think
it was a moment in the game that probably could have been good to have put before the castle.
Yes.
And maybe even before beating the four corners of the map. Like, maybe you beat three and then they're like, oh, there's a signal coming from the Farron Woods. We should follow that up.
And,
you know, that could have been a bit dynamic and a bit interesting.
And after the amount of awesome shrines I've done up until that point, shrines that are quite open in their presentation, but also in their how you want to execute in their player freedom. These which were shrine adjacent puzzles of get object A to point B,
yeah,
they felt really dull, or at least like not dull. They felt closed. There was no room to be creative in those puzzles, I found.
I think that makes sense. Yeah.
After doing really creative shrines, I guess. So.
So yeah, beat that, and then I'd done some exploration as well. So Pura was like, "Oh, we've got the fifth sage, but we don't know where Ganondorf is." Oh, wait, you're telling me you defeated the Yiga and they just told you where he was? That's great. And I'm like, and it's like, oh, you mean to say he's in the hole where we found him in the first place? He hasn't moved this whole time. What a surprise.
Fucking Zelda.
Yeah, right. Especially this trying to keep it open-ended in the same way they did with Breath of the Wild, which really hamstrung them in Breath of the Wild, which led to part of their plot and their overall story being quite boring, I guess, overall.
Yeah. Oh, funny.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, just Ganon, you never say anything because it's just a big spider mech, and then it's like nothing, there's not really that much plot. There's a lot more plot that happens in this game, which I appreciate. So I'd begin the descent into the chasm underneath Hyrule Castle.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's an area I'd seen the start of before.
Yeah, you get there and you're like, I'm not fucking meant to be here yet. Like,
I do not want to fight a Gloom Lynel. No, exactly. Thank you.
Did you fight it or did you get around it?
Not the first. I didn't fight it the first time. I did fight it the second time. But I was just like, I'm ready to go. And I didn't think to prepare any extra Gloom food,
yeah,
or even any extra anything. And so I fought this Lynel and he took all of my hearts, man. He brought me down to like 2/5 of my available hearts.
Yeah. Yep.
And I had to use a lot of my Gloom recovery, my like 2 or 3 that I had sitting around to even get through that fight. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot more spelunking to get through after that. And slowly, I lost more and more of my hearts, which was like,
it's an endurance run.
Yeah, it was. It was also cool because I was like, oh, this feels like time I should go back, at least go back up to the sunshine to like fix the gloom levels that I'm at right now, heal myself, come back down. And I was like, no, I'd been feeling up until that point that I was starting to get too strong.
Yeah.
And right. I thought this is the perfect counter to that feeling, is to go with this and to make it one encounter and to make it one attack and to see what I can do. And if it is hard, then see if I can overcome it. And so you descend and you descend and you descend, and this bit did take a while. But I did like the feeling, and then you get to the point where you find the cavern from the start of the game, could break open the wall with the rest of the tableaus in front of you, and you see represented what happens to Zelda, which you could have been able to see at the time if you'd looked, but you didn't because you didn't have the bombs.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it was there the whole time.
It was there the whole time, and the music starts picking up, and your Master Sword's glowing because you're in the gloom, and you find that cavern where the start of the game happened, and you dive in. They brought together a really great sense of climax through those final moments spelunking that area, and it's then especially you dive down to that sort of gloom infested tree area where basically it's the final part of the game.
Yeah.
It's like, this is all strange. Like, this is gross and grotty. And there's that big red barrier and you land and all of the sages come to help you when all of the bosses get respawned. Oh, not even when all the bosses get respawned. When all the when an army gets summoned.
Yeah, yeah.
You land and then all of your friends arrive in person.
Yeah, the fucking Avengers.
And then you just take on like... yeah, exactly. And then you just take on dozens and dozens of Bokoblins and then of Moblins and then of Lizards and then the Gibdos. It was great. The music was excellent throughout.
That fight is really fun.
Yeah, totally. And then they get left behind to deal with something else, and the door closes behind you, and you go to fight Ganondorf.
Yes.
And he's sitting on a bed of gloom roots that are all, like, sucking energy up from Hyrule and feeding it to him. And that's like, oh, that's fucking gross. There was a bit of a sense of, why are you just sitting here as a mummy when we just have a chat, and then he just puts his hand on the ground and he becomes full strength again. And he just does that as soon as you get there. It's like, what have you been doing this whole time, my guy? You've just been waiting for me.
Yeah. this is the part that bummed me the most, I think.
Which part?
The fact that Link and Ganon, like, they might as well not know each other. Like, there's no, I wanted like a Thanos moment. Like, I don't need him to monologue and him, I don't need him to try and convince me that he's right. But I wanted it to be personal. I wanted like.
See, the thing is, the night before I did this, I rewatched all of the memories.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's a lot of plot that happens when doing that. Including the very start of the game where you find Ganondorf. And he says, Link and Zelda. And this is the sword that seals the darkness. You're going to need more than this. Like, that kind of is that moment, right? You know, that's Thanos. Tony Stark saying, you know me? Like, it's just, it happened 20 minutes into the game, 100 hours ago.
Like, it did, but I wanted them, like, the reason that you know me works is also because they have that moment again in Endgame. Like, they have a moment where they start talking to each other, him, Cap, and Tony, and Thor. They have another chat before another fight. It doesn't feel like they just start rushing and fight.
You see, it's funny to me because I find this version of Ganondorf, this is one of the most personal iterations there have been of Ganondorf in the Zelda franchise. So often he's just the bad guy doing bad guy things.
And like, to me, like, he is still that. And I quite enjoyed the tears for the most part. It got a little bit like, oh, all right, let's maybe make this a bit more, like, give it a little bit of chutzpah. Like, let's kind of make this a bit more engaging at times. Cause there's a lot of like, I know what's about to happen. They have spoken across 8 tiers that Zelda is going to become the dragon.
Right.
They've spelled that out to me so many times because you can find it out of order. It's kind of the same issue with your four buddies talking to their past versions of themselves, and they do the exact same thing each time. I understand that, like, you can pick them up in any order, but you can make different versions of them depending on which ones you pick up first to make it a little bit more exciting. You don't need to give me the same cutscene 4 times with a different character swapped in.
Totally.
And so I was hoping for, like, I was hoping for a little bit of recounting of Ganon doing all of this and a feeling of, like, you know, decades of longstanding like anger towards Link, longstanding anger towards Zelda for the trapping and all of this, you know, like even a reference to Ganon, Pig Ganon from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, if he'd been able to reference like how his energy had started to seep out after the calamity, and how he remembered having to face him in some form like 5 years ago or something like that. You're right, that would have been cool.
Like, it feels like he's so detached from so much that has happened in the game, and he's so important to this game because he's so important to what happened to Zelda and all of the tears, but him himself feels unrelated in a way, which is where my disappointment was. Then I thought the fight was fine.
I really enjoyed the fight that happens.
I thought it was better than Link on a horse in that in Breath of the Wild. It was better than that.
Yeah, exactly, right? And better than like just reprising the blights or even the calamity fight before that when he's just like a big guardian. It was really good. It was a bit of a like, oh, he's kind of very similar to Phantom Ganon, but he changed it up and he had new moves and
and then what? Jump and then parry and then wait and then jump and then parry and like it's like Dark Souls 1.
What do you mean?
Oh, the fight to me, like I think I did it in one.
Right.
Like I think I didn't get hit on the fight that I fought him. Or I did
right,
once.
So maybe. For me, I did get hit a few times. I had fairies, but I went into that fight after the army fight with 3 hearts.
Oh my god, okay.
Everything else was gloomed and I had no gloom recovery. So it was like, it was pretty nail biting.
Yeah, you were flying by the seat of your pants, Gary.
I really was. And like, then he has those attacks that just destroy your equipment and like, he almost broke my Hylian shield and like, no, I need that for the cutscenes. So I start going through all my other shit and like, when you get hit by those attacks, it lowers your maximum health, which is pretty intense. Like, that's really cool. Like, that's a cool effect. I can go below 3 health, which is interesting. But, like, I really liked it. It felt like even footing. Because he could do his own flurry rush attack, like, dodges and stuff like that, and he got better as you got better. Like, I really enjoyed it. And the visuals of the fight I thought were really good as well. His red tentacle hair was very intense and a bit like physics silly, jittery all over the place, but like it was also very cool. Now I'd had the very ending of this game spoiled to me slightly because I wanted to watch the start of a Tears of the Kingdom challenge video, and it began with looking at the demon dragon. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, the very first frame of the thing, I'm like, wait, what the fuck? Ah, fuck! So I knew that was going to happen, and that would have been a nice surprise. How did that moment hit you when Ganondorf's like, fuck this, and he eats his stone?
Like, it was cool. I was already cooling on everything, so I only came back out of my cooling into, like, actually, this part's sick, is when you dive to catch Zelda.
Oh, so you didn't really enjoy the dragon fight?
It was fine. Like, I didn't... It was a little bit slow, I think.
Yeah.
And I was sort of... Like, it kind of still reminded me of the Breath of the Wild bit that I also didn't like, where it's like, oh, it's just we're doing a big thing again. I think it ends cool.
I would have agreed, except I found it so... A, the having the light dragon join in, I think, is a really great way to have a
bit of dynamic.
Spoilers. Well, to have Zelda be more included in one of these fights. And it's not like it's the first time that Zelda's been included in the boss fight. She's been included in Wind Waker and Twilight Princess as the person wielding the light arrows to like weaken him, and then you go in for the shot. But the light dragon being such an intrinsic part of this fight. And also, it was quite technologically impressive, too, I felt. Like, this whole sky battle thing, and if you go low enough, then she comes in to catch you, and it goes back up, and you kind of see the loop pretty quickly. But, like, it felt cool, and it felt dynamic. Like, it did exactly enough as it needed to. Needed to, for me, at least.
I was kind of hoping for Zelda to actually, like, do something that wasn't just, like, run support. Like, I was, like, you know, like
yeah.
Like firing arrows is cool. Like, why? Like, just like lunge at him. Like proper. Just like have a dragon fight.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, like have them wrap around each other or something, and then you have to climb up one without touching the other, and then like Shadow the Colossus your way to the head, or like I wanted a bit more. Just a bit more involvement from her. Get her off the bench. She's strong.
Yeah, she's strong. Sure. Yeah.
She also had, in this game, like 100 years of experience or whatever it is.
It's like 100,000 years.
Yeah. Well, like as a dragon, yes. But even, like, she spends a long time after going back in time, but before being a dragon. Like, and you see her get more of that, like, ancient Hylian outfit as the tears go on. Like, I kind of wanted to see, like, ancient age battle Zelda.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. Like, I thought that was setting more up. Like, I thought we were going to get that costume. I thought we were going to get her learning how to use some of that stuff, and then...
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, you were really expecting a lot.
I was like, give me anything.
Yeah.
give me the cool stuff that you're showing me. So,
I don't know. It landed for me. I thought that the dragon fight was awesome. Really great. And then, the final strike of breaking the stone on the dragon's head, and I thought it was very neat that, like, kind of annoyingly neat that they all of a sudden there's like everyone spaces out and is floating in the sky, and then Roru and Sonya are there, and they take Link's hand, but also somehow, in a way that no one ever knew was possible, revert Zelda's draconification. Yes. And it was all in this, like, dream world, and then he comes to and his arm's back, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
And only now are they falling. Like, I was like, all right, like, okay, cool. Like, it's cool that she's back, like, because that would have been weird if she wasn't.
It's the...
But it's a bit... It's incredibly neat.
It's so convenient.
Yeah.
It's the Revenge of the Sith. Like, we got to get to A New Hope real quick. Like, let's just shove all of our pieces into
place. This baby goes here, and this baby goes here, and the mum dies, and Obi-Wan goes here.
And Darth Vader this, and Obi-Wan's wearing this, and...
Yep.
Yeah, it's a shame that Raru and Sonya's thruple had to end in the way that it did. Because they are such a, like, we saw you across the bar and really digged your vibe couple, if I've ever seen one in the Zelda canon.
What? For Zelda?
Yeah.
Right, but they're relatives.
Are they? Oh, are they? Yes. Are they, like, ancient, like, ancestors?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. That works. That works less in my head then. I didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. Like, I never.
It's like, it's when Sonya says, "Come to the castle," and Zelda's like, "Oh, I don't know." And she's like, "Well, just say you're a distant relative." But it's true.
I suppose. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Mm.
Sorry.
They're like 1,000 years apart. I think at that point, like,
it's like 10 or 100,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, like,
Yeah.
Anyway, then that whole moment happens, and then you get one of the hypest moments in a Zelda game, where you then dive for Zelda.
Love
and that. It's just, there's no HUD, and it's just the normal gameplay, but the music is swelling, and the clouds are parting, and you're getting closer to the ground, and the camera goes to the side, and it was very, very, very good.
It was sick. That's like a franchise highlight.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I said something similar in the Discord when I finished the game. I said it's one of the strongest finishes the franchise has had. And then I wrote that, and I told Sam that I'd said that, and I reflected on it, and I was like,
they don't often finish great, do they?
No, that's exactly the opposite of what I was going to say. They often finish excellent.
Right, okay. I've not finished many, so like I'm kind of piecing it together from the ones that I know.
Yeah.
Where they're kind
I mean,
of
I don't
just...
know about I don't really know about the 2D games so much. I mean, I've played A Link to the Past, but for Wind Waker, there's this whole thing where, like, you're in the suspended Hyrule underneath the ocean.
That sounds
And but the ocean's starting to, like, the spell is broken and Hyrule's no longer going to be preserved, and the ocean's starting to fall on you, and Ganondorf wants to fight anyway. Cause he wanted to I can't remember what he wanted to do, something bad, obviously. Twilight Princess is the same. It's this awesome horseback ride, but instead of it being like horse and then you shoot like four targets on a giant beast's back, it's you and Ganondorf, and it's like mounted knight combat with Zelda on the back with a light bow. I don't know. It's just very good. A lot of them have been very good. Even Skyward Sword, the ending specifically the ending, like 30 or 60 minutes, like the final boss fight of that game is really intense and really very hype. So yeah, I think why it impressed me so much with this one is because we just didn't get that with Breath of the Wild.
You said why it impressed you. I thought you were going to say bring up Wyatt Russell again.
No!
So we're talking about the Russell, the Russells, the acting Russells at the moment.
Yeah, the Russell dynasty.
Yeah. We don't get that in Breath of the Wild. It's a weird, it's kind of like a whimper of an ending.
Exactly. Which means for me, it's been 12 years since I've had an exciting finish to a mainline Zelda game that I haven't experienced experienced for the first time, you know? So it was incredibly refreshing for me.
Yeah. The only ending to a Zelda game I thought was awesome. For the ones that I've played, I've not played Wind Waker, for example, or I've not finished Wind Waker rather. The most exciting one I think was probably like Link to the Past, and it's like it's just you just fight Ganon, like nothing happens, like you just fight Ganon.
No, Link to the Past is kind of
it's an older game. Whereas like Phantom Hourglass has got a pretty poor ending. Breath of the Wild has got a poor ending.
You finished Ocarina of Time, haven't you?
No, but I've seen that ending, and I don't hate that ending. I think that scene is cool. It's hard for me, I think, to appreciate that ending without doing it, because most of that game that I've seen has been speedrunning. So I need to see what it's like when you're like trying and it's not like a thing that you know everything about.
Well, I remember when I played it on NSO, I was like, you know what? The ending of this game is really impressive, especially for the time.
It's a cool set piece. It's a really cool set piece.
I like a chain of set pieces, you know, because it's like the whole Ganondorf fight and then the tower collapse.
Yeah.
And then the Beast Ganon fight. It's awesome.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's better than Breath of the Wild ending.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry your hopes weren't met. Because all of that shit would have been cool. You're right.
Yeah, and like I think like after like it's like it's been a tremendous amount of time, but it's been a while since Breath of the Wild. And
yeah, it's just like 7 years from the game came out. It was 6 years.
Yeah. An entire console generation for Nintendo, basically. And I was hoping that they would make it like. A lot of the trailers leading up to the game and a lot of the vibes of the game that the game was putting forward was this like adventure. Like the difference between, this game and Breath of the Wild was that Breath of the Wild was this big, like open your adventure thing. And then leading into Tears of the Kingdom, it was like, No, this is Link's adventure. Like, what you're doing now is, like, a story of Link and a story of Zelda, kind of.
Concurrently.
Yeah, yeah. They put her aside again. And I was hoping that there would be, I'm not like, oh, I need Link to be a character, because I know he's a silent protagonist that, like, yells and is there to talk through you, and that's fine. But I was hoping that there would be a feeling of Link's place in a lot of this, as opposed to like just the guy that Zelda trusts.
Yeah.
Like Link feels more like the hero of time in Breath of the Wild because everybody's telling him this. And I was hoping that that this would be a, like, not just everybody, like, everybody already knows he's the hero of time now, and this is going to be, like, an all-timer journey for this little fella that is going to be storied for ages, and that he was going to go on these wild adventures that are specific to him, and only he would, but, like, he didn't feel super special in this.
I think there's a there was something I really noticed in the final scene of this, and it's the same in Breath of the Wild. In those final moments where you reunite with Zelda, but Zelda looks dead in the eye with the camera, talking to Link. And that felt very indicative to me of a sort of a design philosophy with these two games in particular.
Yeah.
That they want Link to be more of an avatar for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I completely agree with that.
And that's not invalid, right? You know, that's Gordon Freeman. That's, you know, that's been done so many ways. It's been done very well with older Zelda games as well. And you could name your character, for instance. And that's just what it was. And you were the one adventuring, but Link was the default name. Even although now in this, there's voice acting and he's like canonically Link, as he has been for a while, but he's even more that. He's kind of less of a character than he's ever been. He's far less emotive. He's given many less chances to like be anything. When you compare that to something like Wind Waker, where it's about him finding his sister, and you see he has so many expressions in that game of being distraught that he can't save her and being angry and being determined when he gets up to the point where he can, and then when it's about trying to get to Zelda, or like so expressionful, so emotive.
Yeah.
And a very similar expression. He's got such unlike me. But he's like in Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword as well. In Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword as well, he does have much more of a character. Things happen to him and he reacts to them and he cares about the way things play out. We don't get that in these. I think it's part of how Nintendo wants to take this franchise into the open world as part of their big open philosophy.
So this is not immediately related to what you're saying, but did you see that tweet from the other day that I think I posted it, which was someone took my thesaurus and I'm so devastated that they took my thesaurus. I'm just so devastated. I can't be more devastated that they took my thesaurus.
Yeah. I thought that was really clever.
I do completely agree that this like current age for Zelda as a series definitely feels like it's meant to be about the player going on the adventure. And you know, all of the abilities surrounding it reflect that. It's all about, you know, player agency and gameplay and puzzle and mechanics and all that stuff. And I think all that stuff is really cool. However, I think the story of this game lends itself to that less than the first, because there is a greater focus on named characters and the named characters' relationships. I'm not saying they need to go down the route of Wind Waker, where like Link is a like the equivalent of a Saturday morning cartoon character, where it's like, you know, like zany scenarios are happening to him and that's fun and exciting as well. But like, I think there's a middle ground where you can still have a character that is like ultimately determined by the player, but is still guided in a way that it feels like the adventure has been purpose built for the player. Like, I think like an example of that done really well, even though like you and I, like we sort of, I think, feel the same way about this, where like we don't think it's the most amazing thing in the world, but like the modern Dooms do that quite well, where it's like you're like, you know, it's a silent protagonist and Doom Guy isn't a character really, but like the concept of like the demon slayer that all of hell is terrified of, and even though he's not really like a person that you know as like a character, he still has those moments where he's doing things that leans into who everybody says that he is.
Yeah, it's like the Doom Guy personality.
Yeah, and like sometimes it just means like punching a button instead of pressing it with a finger, but sometimes it just means being legitimately scary to the enemies. And the gameplay leans into that as well, with, you know, like them freaking out whenever the Doomslayer shows up and everybody referring to him as like, you know, the person that's going to clean out hell. I think there was room for that to happen, and I was really hoping that it was going to come through Ganon, because that makes the most sense for that to happen through there because everyone else is absent. Ryru does that at the beginning a little bit. Like he leans into Link's character and purpose in the world a little bit with his initial guiding moments.
Right, but it's at a point in time where we don't understand anything that's happened.
Exactly. And so that part is a little bit like intentionally confusing because you're not quite sure what's going on and why Ryru feels this way about you and you've never seen a creature like this before as well.
It's so easy to forget that you even had conversations with Ryru by the time you understand how important he is.
Exactly. I kind of wanted, like, I wanted a little bit more of Link's person in the, like woven through the story of the game.
Yeah.
Because most of the story kind of comes from, like, Pura.
Yeah, and she doesn't really even have that much to do anyway. Totally.
Like, she's there just as a vessel for, like, what to do next, which for often means...
She's there as a compass. Yeah. She's an objective marker.
Yeah.
Like, there could be so many moments for, like, levity with all of the different sages in this game.
Yeah.
Like, all of them. They all are youthful and energetic and... you know, burdened with responsibility, but also quite enthusiastic. And, you know, they could have a blunder and maybe Link could like kind of chuckle and scratch his head and smile, you know,
yeah.
But he doesn't ever smile in this game.
And like, or like have a moment of teaching. Like he learned so much from the four sages in the first game.
Mm.
It would be so cool to have the reverse of that. Like, it would have the moments where he's actually passing on the knowledge that their ancestral sages have actually given to him.
Especially because so many of the sages in this game were related to or even were the descendants of the champions from the last game.
Yeah.
So, like, you could say to Sidon, like, I don't know, maybe it's time to give Link a voice, you know? Like, maybe it's... I'd be okay with that, honestly. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. When you go back to Wind Waker... when you go back to Wind Waker and the first time you're on the boat, what is it? The boat of Red Lions. The King of Red Lions.
Sure.
And Link sits up and he's been passed out and he's woken up and he's hearing this voice. He's looking around. And then the head of the boat turns around and then says something to him. And he's all like, "What?" And he like falls back, but he's like, he emotes, he speaks, he gives, he performs.
Yeah.
You get that sense of how bewildered he is as this young child to be confronted by a talking boat. You know what I mean? Like, there's none of that here.
Yeah. And I don't even think that he needs to speak. But I just want him to be an active participant, I think.
Yeah.
I think that it works in Breath of the Wild, and I think it works less here.
And to be fair, they were addressing the criticism that, you know, the story and the characterization of everyone was kind of weak in the first game. There was not much to bite into in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, but I think that like they didn't learn that lesson enough, I think, for this, for me. Like, I wanted them to lean in harder, and yeah, make me I don't not like Link. I don't have a feeling about Link. Like, it's hard it's hard to have an opinion on him. Like, I like Mario. Right? They're so close to each other.
Yeah.
Like, Mario doesn't do anything physically different to Link aside from Mario's really excited and happy to be there. And that's all he really does. But like, even the moments in like Odyssey, for example, where there's like hilarious shenanigans, he will still react to certain things, or he'll look around with a look of concern at something. And then
even the end of the game, right, where both Bowser and Mario are trying to like give flowers to Peach or something like that. Like, that's just a character moment.
Samus has character. Samus has a bit of like, you know, like the character for the most part is just like fucking cool as hell. But like,
yeah,
it's still a character of like, what's Samus's character? She's cool as hell. She's going to do things that are actually extra, but it's because she knows they're fucking cool. And she's going to do them because of that. That's
similar vibes to Doom Guy, right?
Yeah, same thing as Doom Guy. You know, like, there's that, you know, like Master Chief in the first Halo is kind of like his whole thing is just like, I do cool things and I do them cool.
Yeah. Man, you got to respect it, you know.
You got to respect the hustle.
You got to respect that confidence and that drive.
I have a question for you before we wrap it up. What's the next Zelda look like?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I don't.
I mean, I can't fucking believe that they made a sequel to. I've been saying this for a year now. I can't believe they made a sequel to Breath of the Wild and that it made Breath of the Wild irrelevant. Like,
I don't think they made it irrelevant, but I think that
not entirely, yeah. but for a decent portion of it, they kind of did. But I can't believe they did that. I can't believe they made Breath of the Wild. They're really in their bag right now. And I kind of want to just let them, I just want to see what they want to do. Cause they're giving us stuff we didn't know we wanted, which is great.
But like,
however,
is it the same structure?
I don't know if I want a third one of these.
but at
the same time, it was excellent. So like, I don't know. I don't know, man. It's like how, you know, I could go through the motions of doing all the different Assassin's Creeds, but as soon as they started becoming 80 to 160 hour RPGs, like I barely want to touch them once every 4 years. Like, so, but at the same time, these games come out so far apart, so that doesn't matter. That's not a problem. So I don't know, man. I don't know what I want.
Yeah, I know. But like,
I do want something of there were so many times in this game where they honored the past of the series in a way that they skipped over that in Breath of the Wild. And those moments as a fan of the series really, you know, maybe it's fan service, but I don't care. It was awesome.
It's still good. Like I fucked with it and I usually like gawk at fan service, but it felt respectful without it being the only thing that's good. I think there's become, like, thanks to the mouse, there has been a conflation between fan service and the thing you recognize is the substance.
I really did think you meant computer mice for a second.
No. Yeah, thanks to the concept of the computer mouse.
No, you meant Mickey.
Yeah. I mean Mickey. There's been a feeling of like every new thing is just something I recognize.
Mm.
And so when like it, there's always a, like an eye of like, there's a pointed look at any time anything now references anything else, because it's all we've been like shoveled for the past 10 years of cinema.
Yeah. By the same token with Zelda games, they've always built upon each other. They've always built, it's kind of like a Ratchet game in that same sense. You know, it's not formulaic, or if it is, it's also defined by what it does differently to what it did last time or differently to the formula, while also honoring what came before and doing a new twist on what came before, like it's dungeons and sages and Temple of Time and musical instruments and the overworld and the underworld, like all those concepts giving variations of them.
It's a language, but it's also a genre. Like it's its own language, which sort of means that it's, you know, it's like putting lightsabers in Star Wars, right? Like,
like a mythology.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I worry that, you know, I think Aonuma or one of the other higher ups at Nintendo has said since the release of Tears of the Kingdom that, oh, why would you want us to go back? We're keen on this. Why would the fans want us to go back and do what we were doing before? And it's a good question. It feels a little dismissive, but it's a good question when Skyward Sword was received as sort of middlingly as it was for what the series is. You know, it was like only a great game, you know what I mean? Rather than like one that everyone could hang their hats on. So, you know, it's a good point. It needed reinvention. They found it. They did do that. And they reinvented the medium, let alone the genre.
At the same time, there's a reason we have Metroid games and Metroid Prime games.
Yes. Yes, Jeremy. I 100% agree. I would love there to be room for some classic style new Zelda games and brand new groundbreaking, we don't even know what we want Zelda games.
Yeah. Yeah. give me a, like, you know, when I think of the last Zelda game that I truly loved, it was Link Between Worlds.
Yeah.
Which was fucking phenomenal. And a sequel to The Link to the Past, basically.
Yeah, which is...
which is
wild,
bonkers that they did that.
Like 20 to 25 years after the original.
And did it in a way that was both, like, not quite groundbreaking, but at least revolutionary in its own area. Like, it was new, it was fresh, it was exciting. It felt like the old thing, but it wasn't the old thing. They didn't lean on the old thing. They just built off of the old thing.
Mm-hmm.
And made just a the best game on the Nintendo 3DS.
Yeah.
they just fucked around and did that.
Yeah.
And the sequel to what I think is one of the greatest games of all time. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's the fucking Blade Runner 2049 of video games. And they have room to do that while also doing their large RPGs on mainline consoles that feel like stories you pass down to your grandkids.
Yeah, for sure. I keep hearing scuttlebutt every now and then that we might be getting an Ocarina of Time remake.
Like a full, yeah.
And I don't know if I want it, you know?
Why not?
As soon as I see it, I'll change my tune, yeah, but I don't know if I want it.
Why not?
Because
the old one's
I'm so incredibly familiar with it. I don't want to see it changed, but I also don't want to see it just again. So I'm kind of like, I'll never be happy kind of a situation. You know what I mean?
I think it, like, as long as they keep the vibe, because like Nintendo's remakes, I think for the most part have been not enough to, well, it's the game. they don't often change things.
The standout exception to that, I think, would be Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
The cartoony style, like toy-like style that goes along really well with the dream-like scenario of probably being in this dream island sequence.
But, like, a lot of their other remakes are like, well, it's the game again, and you're charging full price to...
Plus, like, a really boring, like, challenge room.
Yeah. I guess the close example to, like, you made it better is Metroid Prime. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know what a remake of Ocarina looks like. I think it would be cool to do a Blue Point kind of, like, let's just make it intensely gorgeous looking tech demo-esque remake while
I've just had a thought.
But I also don't want them to do the... It should have been my timeline again, so it's on my mind as a thing that I really hate.
The Unreal...
No, not that. No, I hate that. Like, they're not going to do that. They don't do that.
No. That's just
that's just people that don't know what art looks like. The one that showed up on my timeline yesterday was Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary.
You do hate that.
Yeah, like, they just completely fucked that. And, like, it looks awful.
I just had a thought.
Shoot.
What if they Blue Point remade Link to the Past in 3D?
I don't know what that looks like.
I'd be keen for that. I don't know what that looks like either. That would be a lot.
Like, that's just...
But I'd be more keen for that than I would be for an Ocarina of Time remake.
But that's just a new game.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be new. Because, you know, you can look at Ocarina and say, oh, it's the template of Link to the Past put into 3D. But they're not the same game. I would like, what would that look like if they brought that game forward?
Can I excite you a little bit? Ocarina,
I don't know.
Ocarina of Time, but it gets the Resident Evil 4 remake treatment.
Oh, that's what I'm assuming we're talking about when we say Ocarina remake.
Yeah, that's what I assume we get as well, where it's like, it's not actually the original game, but it's pretty dang fucking close.
It's spiritually the same game.
Yeah, it hits all the right notes.
Look, it would be amazing to see, like, a Hyrule field that like you can't actually see to the other side of from the other end of it. Like, I don't think there's that many places you can literally do that in the N64 game, but that's because there's a hill in the middle of it. Yeah. I think specifically so that you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a technical design hill.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's effective.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a small field. Like, it would be cool if you could really grasp the sense of Gerudo Canyon and the desert and the lake and Death Mountain. Like, that would be awesome. But I don't know. I don't trust that process. It's too precious for me to trust.
Is it the 30th anniversary of Ocarina soon?
It was 98, so no, not yet. Right, last year was 25. We did a 25th last anniversary last year.
Right. It's been 15 years since the remake.
Yeah. not quite.
Or is it 10 years since the remake? There's
it's like 10 or 12 or something like that.
There's a Zelda anniversary that I think is next year.
Next year is the Zelda franchise anniversary, 40 years.
40, right.
Which is pretty wild. Or maybe that's the following year, actually, now that I think about it, because was it the 25th anniversary when Skyward Sword came out? I think that was 2011.
The Legend of Zelda.
So it's 2 years to the 40th anniversary.
The Legend of Zelda 1 came out in 1986.
That's what I thought, yeah. Because Mario was 85. Zelda was the next year.
There we go. All right. Any final thoughts?
I was very sad when I beat the game because I wanted to play more because I was so like up on it. I was like high on the game, but I knew when I'd be playing. I know I do have more, but it would be more of the like 150 hours I had already played and not more of the 2 hours of story and cutscenes and voice acting and cinematic moments that I had so enjoyed and wanted more of.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's just not going to be that. So I haven't touched it since I finished it.
Yeah. I wonder if you will. I think you'll dip
in. I want
in,
to. I do want to do all the shrines.
Right.
I don't think I want to map all the depths, though. Like, I don't think I've got that in me.
It's pretty quick. It's really not that long. Because you just...
I don't like. I'd make like a hoverboard or something, and just like zoop, 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 and I'd have all the map markers from having the shrines above already. But
you should do one of the big boss fights in the depths.
Oh, I've done those, like the reprisals, right? Of the temple fights. What are you talking about?
Have you done the big Gleox?
Yeah, the King Gleox. Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
I've done one of those in the depths, one of those in the sky.
Right. Okay. In that case, yep. You done it.
You done it.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, King Gleox are fun.
Back to Winnipeg. sorry, did you have something else?
Not really.
Okay.
Now I'm just Googling back to Winnipeg.
It's a Simpsons joke.
Oh. Yeah.
That does bring us to the end of the Video App Cast for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you listen to the next episode in a couple weeks. The best way to make sure that you don't miss that is to follow us on social media. You can do that by going to @minimapAU on your social media of choice. You can also head to minimap.com.au for absolutely everything that we do, including the Minidisc podcast. For those of you that are with us live on Twitch, you can stick around. We're about to start a little post-show. And for those of you listening later, make sure to give us those oh-so-tasty 5-star ratings. It helps us out. And consider joining us in a couple weeks for the live show. It is a good time indeed. Lastly, you can also support us on Patreon. If you want to help keep the lights and mics on, you can do so by heading to patreon.com/minimapAU. Doing so for $5 Australian, you can know that you are indeed supporting the show, and you'll also gain access to some of our special bonus features. That is going to be it for us. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you on the flippity flop, motherfucker.
What the fuck?
And you said my outros were bad.